You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Minor League Baseball Podcast returns to the iTunes slash RSS slash Android. So I don't know what other people get things on. I'm an iPhone user, and so I don't know what other people listen to things on. But hey, welcome back to wherever you were listening to the Show Before the Show podcast. Hi, everyone. I'm Tyler Mon in New York City. Not this week. Is Sam Dykstra. Sam is not in New York City. It's a whole bungled intro. I don't know the name of Android podcast apps. Sam's not actually in New York. This is the authority people have come to expect from me. Hi, Sam.
Hi. I would love to find out what New York City not is. That sounds
New York
like
City
a,
not.
Yeah, that just sounds like a place with no buildings taller than a floor. population density of one person per square mile.
This is
everything. Bizarro world. New York City is where I'm coming to you from.
No, Sam is home in Massachusetts. Sister getting married this weekend. Sam's the officiant.
Yeah.
Marriage
wings us together today. No, I would be killed. I would be.
You'd wind up in a lake.
Yeah, Vegas would have odds on who would kill me first. My sister would probably be in the lead because she's closest, but my mother is pretty fast.
Okay.
Could probably get to me pretty quickly if I tried to do the Princess Bride. Right. So
you'd never return to New York, not.
Yeah, never.
Yeah, exactly. Saying.
I would not alive anyways.
Not alive.
No, the focus will be on them. It's an exciting weekend. It's an exciting time. I only have one sister. So congratulations early to Em and John, which would be a very fun weekend. And but meanwhile, we've got tons of minor league baseball to talk about.
Just got to focus, stay focused, stay within yourself. Don't try to do too much.
Right, I'm just staying one day
line at a time.
Yeah. That Saturday, I can't focus on what's not in my control yet. This is in my control. So.
Try to give your wedding a chance. Try to give the wedding a chance.
Chance, right.
That's all you can ask for.
Yeah, I just want to give the team a win, really. I don't know how you give the wedding a win, but I'm going to do my darndest.
Oh, man. So, with that, a big welcome in to this week's edition of the Show Before the Show podcast from Minor League Baseball, MILB.com. Like I said, I'm Tyler and he is Sam. This is episode number 66 of the Show Before the Show. And let's kick it off, getting started with three strikes for this week's episode with some pretty big prospect news, as we have come to see really with regularity over the last probably month, maybe even 6 weeks or so. Last year, obviously, we talked so much about it being, you know, kind of prospect Christmas every day of the year with studs going up to the big leagues. 2016 has started to feel that way. Maybe not the same caliber or the same depth of that really, really top level talent, but we're starting to see just really good prospect after really good prospect head to the major leagues. The latest is Pittsburgh Pirates top prospect Tyler Glasnow, who is headed to the big leagues to make his major league debut against the Cardinals after dominating to start this season with AAA Indianapolis.
Yeah, this is something we have been looking forward to for a couple of years now. It feels like Glasnow is just one of those guys who, you know, since he was drafted in 2011 in the fifth round, when he was taken with that pick, not really well known, was just a big wiry guy, 6'8", coming out of California. Not everybody got to see him just because... Yeah, that's just the way it worked out, and the Pirates thought they found a guy who was pretty projectable. He took a huge velocity spike as the years went on and has grown into the big-time prospect we know now. Has always struck out a lot of guys, 614 strikeouts in 479 and a third innings. So he's always been on our radar as a guy who we would get excited when he does get the call, that comes this week. Like you said, he's making his debut Thursday, which is... Tonight we're recording this Thursday morning, switching up a little bit. This year at AAA Indianapolis, you know, he's meeting expectations. He's got a 1.78 ERA, 113 strikeouts in 96 innings, a 1.14 WHIP. The problem with Glasnow is always going to be his control. He hasn't quite been able to put that together. He's got 52 walks in 96 innings this year. There was a stretch there between June 17th, June 22nd, where he did not give up any hits. I mean, this is a guy who can hit the mid-90s, upper 90s when he needs to. He's just long and gangly. It's very hard to see the ball coming out of his hand. So he can become downright unhittable at a time. And I've mentioned those two starts because he didn't allow a hit for 13 straight innings. But at the same time, he had walked 11 batters. So it was one of those things where he didn't allow any hits and he was nearly untouchable. But, you know, if you were just patient enough with him, you were going to get on base. And his whip was close to one in that instance anyways, despite not giving up any hits.
Yeah, that really is sort of the most emblematic stretch for him. It shows you both simultaneously how tantalizingly good he can be. I mean, 13 straight innings of hitless ball. But, yeah, you walk 11. And over that span, he struck out 14. So, you know, you're throwing a ton of pitches there too.
Right. I mean, when you don't give up hits, that helps your pitch count. But he was still, you know, 97 pitches through six innings on June 17th. In his last start before this call, he started July 2nd. The control was a little better there, only gave up the one walk, but still needed 101 pitches to get through six innings. Not bad, you know, it's not 100 pitches through five or anything like that, but it's, you know, when you're hoping that these guys can work deep into games and they're already hitting the century mark in terms of pitches, not necessarily the best barometer there. But Glasnow, he's got major league stuff right now. It's going to be tough for a lot of major league bats to hit what he has. He's going to be going up against a lot more patient hitters than even he saw in AAA. And what is going to happen tonight against, you know, in that major league debut, you know, are the Cardinals going to, they will know that scouting report off of him. I mean, it's not that hard to look at a stat sheet and know that this guy walks a lot of batters. But are they going to be able to hold back and try to let him beat them in what should be, you know, a nervous time for him, but an exciting time? You know, a lot of guys show control problems anyways because it is such a nervous first outing. So what is going to happen with him, we'll have to wait and see. And we'll have to see what happens with him going forward as well, because the Pirates have two guys on the DL right now in Gerrit Cole and Jameson Taillon. And what's going to happen when those guys come back? Is Glasnow just going to be sent right back down? Is he going to get a chance to actually win a major league spot here? Or is this just more of a spot start? We don't have a clear answer on that. The fact that Super 2 concerns, all that kind of stuff, arbitration contracts, all that is kind of by the wayside now. That probably shouldn't play a part into it. It's just straight up, can Tyler Glasnow get major league hitters out with regularity? And we'll start to see that tonight.
Starting strong will be a big thing for Tyler Glasnow in his 17 starts this season, an ERA in the first inning of 3.18, which is his highest of any inning outside of the sixth. He's only pitched the sixth inning for 9 1/3 total sixth innings, and that's a 3.86 mark there. But starting strong, obviously a very big thing. He's given up 6 runs on 12 hits in 17 first innings so far this season. But he also has his best strikeout to walk ratio in that stretch as well. He struck out 24 batters and he has walked 6 in his total numbers there. So exciting time. If you're the Pirates, all this young talent for the pitching prospects seems to be arriving all simultaneously with Jameson Taillon. And, you know, we've seen the success that even some of the more less heralded guys, you know, Chad Kuhl comes up, Stephen Brault we've seen, Wilfredo Boscan got a start. I mean, that Indianapolis rotation that has been so good this year, those guys are finally starting to graduate and see their time in Pittsburgh for a team that has really started to play a lot better as of the last couple of weeks. Strike two this week. We're going to head away from the mainland and to the international market. July 2, the signing day in international prospect communities. The international signing deadline, or the first day of the signing period for international prospects, is always full of very intense speculation because most guys lean somewhere. It's almost like college recruiting. You sort of know where guys are going to land, but there are oftentimes some surprises. This year, the guy that everybody was focused on, Venezuelan shortstop Kevin Maiton, he is the one that you really want to keep an eye on from this class, who inks a deal with the Atlanta Braves. But Sam, what stood out to you about the international signing day?
Yeah, so Maiton, I think, is the story here. Everything you read about him is, it just, you know, oozes talent. He's got tools up the wazoo. MLB.com ranked him as their top international prospect, gave him plus grades for his hit, his power, his arm, and you consider him an average fielder at shortstop, which, you know, if you can have a lot of power and hit pretty well for a shortstop, with a good arm, you're going to get a lot of value out of that. Not necessarily a big burner. He got a 40 grade on the 20 to 80 scale for his running. But, you know, the things you hear about him, a lot of people say he's the best international signing since, or best international prospect, I should say, since Miguel Sano, and we know how much he was bandied about when he was going through this process, you know, as part of a documentary and that whole, you know, how much that his trip through this whole thing was illuminated through that. So Maiton, I think, is the class. He's a switch hitter. Like I said, shortstop out of Venezuela, only 16 years old, because that's, you know, he's now eligible. By the way, we're now hitting the time when international prospects were born in 2000.
Ah!
Thank you. That was the reaction.
I knew it was coming this year.
Yeah, so we're going to start covering some minor leaguers who were born in 2000, which we need the Conan O'Brien bit. The
2000.
Yeah, we're just going to do that every time we mention these guys now.
Kevin Maiton born February 12th, 2000.
Yeah, so everybody take that one in. But that aside...
2000! Okay.
That aside, it's interesting that he signed with the Braves because they obviously have two really good shortstops.
Yeah.
Sells right now, and Dansby Swanson and Ozzie Albies.
Really lacking in that top flight prospect talent, the shortstop position of the Braves system.
Right, and it's not like you can say, oh, well, those guys are further along. I mean, obviously they are. They're both at AA Mississippi now. They're playing together. I don't know if we talked about that on the podcast. Now Albies looks like he's going to be the guy who's at second. Swanson's going to be the guy at short. They really want that tandem playing together moving ahead. But Albies is still a teenager himself. So this is not like they needed a youth thing at the bottom. That being said, you never draft, you never sign when it comes to prospects or you know, young guys. You never do that based on what the organizational depth chart looks like. You go out and get talent, and you know, best case scenario, you have too much at one position and they all just become assets for trades, or you move guys around. With Maiton, there's talk that, like I mentioned, he's not the greatest runner, so he's not going to have the best range necessarily for a shortstop guy. He's 6'2". He's a little bit on the taller side. Could certainly fill out a little bit. He only weighs 165. So he might profile best at third base. So if you're the Braves now, you can dream on a future infield that includes Ozzie Albies, Dansby Swanson, and Kevin Maiton easily, and everybody would be playing at a position that they can play well. So we'll see how that goes going forward, but they're definitely going to try to get as much as they can out of him as a shortstop, because if he, like I said, if he is a good hitter with a good amount of power that at shortstop, that's when we're talking about, you know, top 10 overall players in the game. So he's definitely the one to watch, but definitely recommend checking out MLB.com. has a lot of coverage on these international prospects. These aren't guys necessarily in our peer review quite yet, but once they hit the minors, I'm sure we'll be talking about a lot of them in the years to come.
Jesse Sanchez of MLB.com has a really good story, as Sam mentioned, from last week that is up on the site right now. The Oakland Athletics inked the Cuban player, Armenteros Lazarito is his nickname. He's a potential five-tool guy, according to Jesse Sanchez. The San Diego Padres went really strong and heavily into the international market this year, which is a big step for the Padres because that's where A.J. Preller made his bones. A.J. Preller, when he was with the Rangers, he was a phenom in that regard, discovering gems, diamonds of talent in the international market. Then goes to San Diego, blows up that whole roster, trades for everybody, deals away so much of the system, and now it seems like that's kind of swinging back to we have to build this from within. Padres go out, they sign six of MLB Pipeline's top 30 prospects on the international market, and so that's one thing to keep an eye on too. If that's sort of a change in the organizational philosophy for San Diego back to what they really do successfully, or what that administration has done successfully at past stops. And there is also one other story that comes out of this that we should discuss. The Boston Red Sox last week were handed some pretty well unprecedented slaps on the wrist for their prior conduct in the international signing market. They were banned from signing any international players during this 2016-2017 signing period, and also had five players taken out of the system and declared free agents, which were 17-year-old outfielders Albert Guimero and Simon Muzioti.
Guaymero last year, one of the really, really good prospects. He was one of the guys who was sent out of the system. A couple of shortstops, Antonio Pinheiro and Eduardo Torrealba, and right-handed pitcher Cesar Gonzalez. All of those guys become free agents. They all signed with the Red Sox last year. But the reason for this, the commissioner's office said that the Red Sox had worked in a way that circumvented the bonus pools by signing these guys as kind of a group deal, a package deal, quote-unquote, which is against the rules. So the Red Sox, I mean, this is a pretty unprecedented slap to the signing process for a team, especially, I mean, it's one thing to take five guys, declare them free agents, and boot them out of a system, but banning the team from signing anybody in this period is pretty huge.
Yeah, and the way I kind of understand this story, it sounds, I think somebody, I wish I knew who it was exactly, I don't want to take credit where it's not due, but somebody described it as essentially they got caught speeding. You know, everybody speeds. Everybody did this to some extent, but either the Red Sox weren't careful in covering it up, or Major League Baseball decided they were going to get very stringent on this. And you kind of touched on it, but just to go on it a little deeper, essentially what they did was, back when they signed Yoan Moncada, they went over their signing bonus by a specific amount. You know, they had to pay an extra tax on top of that, and another penalty of that was that they could not sign an international prospect for more than $300,000, which sounds like a lot of money, especially for these guys coming from some of these areas. But, you know, when some of these guys are signing for $4 million, $5 million, that can seriously hurt you from getting a top 30 prospect. So the way some teams, particularly in this case the Red Sox, go around that is that they sign multiple players, each to $300,000 deals. That way they don't go above the penalty, but in order to get the one gem of the group, they agree to this deal where, you know, so let's say three guys get 300,000 each. Well, one guy might get 800,000 of that and the other two split the remaining 100. Technically everybody was only given 300,000, but one player gets more than he needed. It's probably more than he would have gotten through other clubs who could sign him for more than $300,000. Anyways, it's illegal under Major League Baseball rules. The Red Sox didn't cover it up well enough, or they got caught red-handed doing this with everybody else. No, I shouldn't say everybody else, but what a lot of teams are rumored to do, and this is just a case of Major League Baseball bringing down the hammer. I would think it would scare away teams from doing this ever again. I mean, you don't want to go an entire year without signing international prospects. I mean, that can seriously hurt a farm system. Not that the Red Sox farm system is particularly weak right now, but you know, we'll have to keep an eye on this, see how it affects it 2 years, 3 years down the line. But yeah, this is a pretty serious case of Major League Baseball bringing down the hammer, and we'll see what it does for the Red Sox.
Strike three this week. We are going futures game conversation. We're going to have a lot more futures game conversation here in a little bit, but Sam is a really good tool shed piece, as they always are, up on the site right now, comparing kind of the strengths of each roster, the world team and the U.S. team, in this weekend's matchup at Petco Park Sunday evening. This is going to be a really, really fun one to watch. There's a lot of really good talent. The roster seem like they're constructed very evenly. It's not, you know, we talked about some of the groups, the position player groups that stand out to us, but they seem like very evenly matched rosters. But what sticks out to you about the world and the U.S. teams on these sides for Sunday's game, Sam?
Yeah, so if anybody has read the piece yet, I did a tale of the tape type situation where I just compared, you know, the pitchers from the world to the pitchers of the U.S., catchers of the world, so on, infielders, outfielders. And if you look at it, you might notice that I picked, you know, the U.S. has the advantage in three groups. They have the advantage in pitchers, infielders, and outfielders. And I think the world only has the advantage in catchers. That being said, I think you're right, Tyler, in saying that the rosters are fairly close. I mean, this is not a chance, an opportunity for the U.S. to just blow out the world. You know, I don't think it's as far apart as it would make it seem just to say it's three groups on one side to the only the one on the other. But I do think the U.S. has a little bit of an advantage. I think that outfield is just really incredibly stacked. I think I said that last week, but just to reiterate that, you know, for a group that lost Austin Meadows, who might be the top outfield prospect in the game right now, lost him to injury. They replace him with David Dahl, who is just crushing the ball right now after a production or a promotion to AAA Albuquerque in the Rocky system, I mean, that outfield got just as strong as it was. It didn't take a step back.
And by the way, he has inspired maybe the best hashtag in all of minor league baseball this year. An Albuquerque TV reporter, I believe, came up with Better Call Dahl.
Oh,
now that he's
man.
In Albuquerque, which is fantastic.
Oh, wow.
Nice work.
That's one of those that just makes you sad you didn't come up with it first.
Yeah, I know. Really good.
I just imagine everybody in Albuquerque, though, is always running just Better Call Saul, Breaking Bad puns through their heads.
Yeah, all the time. Either that or they just loathe them intensely.
Oh, that too.
Oh, yeah, we get it.
Yeah. You know, we do other things than meth here. What? but no, the World Team has, for a team that's going to roll out, you know, just for one game, the fact that they're going to start Gary Sanchez, probably a catcher, and then bring in Francisco Mejia, who's one of the minors' hottest hitters right now in the Indian system, and a guy with a plus arm. I would be surprised if the U.S. team even tries to run on either of those guys. Both have plus to plus plus arms behind the plate. I'd be surprised, but I really hope they do run on the catchers, because that would be a great little clip to see. And then the infield is really talented as well. Willy Adames is going there. Carlos Osuaje will be playing in front of his own Padres fans, is hitting the ball really well at AAA El Paso. We'll get a chance to see you on Mankata on, I think, his first national stage in that kind of thing. So, you know, to say that the U.S. has a distinct advantage is probably a little misleading, but I do like the arms that they can roll out. I think they can just roll out five different top 100 prospects between Carson Fulmer, Amir Garrett, Josh Hader, Jeff Hoffman, and Joe Musgrove. That's your first five innings, and then you just throw out somebody like JT Chargois, who can hit triple digits, and it's going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch, that's for sure. I think the U.S. has a little bit of an advantage here, just not as big as it might look on paper.
So, futures game coming up on Sunday, which is going to be a ton of fun. I'm ordinarily working during the futures game, but this year I am not, so I'm excited to actually sit and watch a futures game. Because man, there's a lot of really fun talent on those rosters, and like Sam said, I mean, there are advantages on each side, but they're not just sizable. You know, it isn't lining up to be, oh man, look at this world roster compared with this U.S. roster. It looks like it's a pretty evenly matched showcase we got coming up at Petco Park, and that is going to be a lot of fun to watch on Sunday. So, with that, let's talk a little bit more about the futures game. This week's showcase features so many of the top prospects in baseball in kind of a different style format than how you ordinarily watch baseball players because of the all-star status of this game. So we're going to talk about these guys in more of a direct prospect scenario of who we would want if we were starting a club with members of these rosters. Talking a little bit more about the futures game on this week's edition of the Show Before the Show podcast coming up next.
Watch the stars of tomorrow today on MILB TV. Before they made it to the show, stars like Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, and Chris Bryant were on MILB TV. Subscribe today to get more than 5,000 minor league games streamed live and on demand, including games from affiliates of all 30 major league clubs. Select all-star and postseason games are also included. On the go? Watch on your iPhone, iPad, or iPod Touch with the free MILB First Pitch app. Visit MILB.tv for details.
We got a chance to do something like this back in the autumn when the Arizona Fall League was in progress, and we talked about who we would want to build teams around if we were starting franchises with prospects who were in the Arizona Fall League. We're going to take that principle, and we're going to apply it to the 2016 Futures game, which, again, is coming up this Sunday at Petco Park, the site of the 2016 Major League Baseball All-Star Game. So here's how we're going to do it. Three picks each, one from the world, one from the United States, and one wild card pick that we'll get to pick from either roster. And Sam, I think I went first with the AFL draft in the fall, so I'm going to let you take the top overall selection in our three-man baseball teams here.
Oh, wow. I feel so blessed now. I'll give you the first pick of the second round. How about
okay.
that? We'll snake
right.
this. So it's,
we'll snake this pick.
Yeah. All three of these picks. This isn't going to go for too long. Whenever we're talking about building a franchise, building a farm system, you always want to build up the middle. So, you know what? This might be going a little against the grain, given how The one of the other guys at this position has performed this year, but I'm gonna take friend of the podcast Dansby Swanson.
Okay.
With the first overall pick, just because I am convinced he can stick at shortstop. I think he's certainly shown that he's got a plus run tool. He can certainly hit. He's hitting 291, 378, 452 this year between high A and double A Mississippi. Six homers, 10 steals. This guy seems like just a cornerstone of your franchise. If he can stick it short, he seems to have all, I don't want to call them intangibles because that just sounds like a way of, circumnavigating facts and just saying, I feel good about this. But no, Swanson, everything you hear about him, he's a guy that brings everybody up around him. Certainly has shown the skills to stick at shortstop both defensively and then hit enough to bring plenty of value offensively. I said I'm going up against the grain a little bit because it was either between him or Alex Bregman, and we know Alex Bregman is the breakout star, I think, of the 2016 season, a guy who was taken one pick later than Swanson in last year's draft. The reason I don't quite take Bregman is just because it seems like his future might be at third. Part of that is because Carlos Correa is playing there at shortstop now for the Astros, and they might move Bregman to third. And he could probably hit enough for either position, but I'm more convinced that Swanson can be a shortstop long term. And he's my first pick.
I like it. Dansby Swanson currently with the Double A Mississippi Braves. I'm going to stay with the Double A prospect, and I'm going to stay in the middle of the infield on the other side, and I'm going to go with Yoan Moncada in the Boston Red Sox system, who has just torn it up this season. 61 games with Class A Advanced Salem, EOPS 923, promoted to Double A Portland in there. 14 games so far, he's OPSing 908. Moncada's the real deal. I mean, we've talked about him so much on the show, but to me, even though, he doesn't play the shortstop position, he's still a premium middle infield guy that I feel like you can build around. And one of those prospects that it just seems like our time with him in the minor leagues is going to be very limited because he's handled every level that he's been challenged with so well. He's 21 years old right now in the Eastern League, and just the continual ability to adjust so quickly to the challenges that he faces in getting acclimated to, being in full season ball for the first time, transitioning to playing in the United States for the first time, being a Cuban prospect. He is so good. He is that good. So I'm going to go with Moncada, and that gives me the second overall selection. So I'm going to go over to the U.S. side. And the one thing that we've discussed so much about this season is where we believe pitching prospects will be most successful. And, because so many of these guys, Josh Hader's a good example who's on the United States roster. Hader, so many people believe, is ticketed for the bullpen, but he's been so successful as a starting pitcher. One of the other guys who fits in an organization who I'm going to take with my second pick is Carson Fulmer, because I really like the ceiling that Carson Fulmer has. And we have seen that the Chicago White Sox are not afraid to bring to challenge guys with these quick promotions through the system who come out of big college programs. They did it with Chris Sale. Carlos Rodon rose very quickly through the system. I really like Carson Fulmer. This season, the Lakeland, Florida native, who is still just 22 years old, and again, seems like we've been talking about Carson Fulmer for quite some time. This season, what we've seen from him has been very much a, I don't want to say a mixed bag, but he has looked like a guy learning the Double A ranks for the first time. And I don't think that that is a knock on Carson Fulmer, especially with the way that he has pitched as of late. But in total this year, a 4-9 record, 4.76 ERA. But it still just seems like to me, he has the package. It's just about being able to get everything pieced together in the way that you handle full season ball, the way that you handle advanced hitters, all that kind of stuff. I don't know if he's going to rise as quickly as the other guys through the system. I mean, obviously not as quickly as Chris Sale, which nobody does. But I really, really like what Carson Fulmer still has and the package that he presents going forward. So I'm going to make him my pick off of the U.S. side because I had to get a pitcher too.
Yeah, and actually I'm going to stay in pitching. I'm going to go over to the world side just so we have this evened out. He was probably going to be my second overall pick anyways, unless Moncada was still on the board. And of course, Tyler snatched him from me because that's how these things work.
That's me.
Yeah, that's how you know we didn't coordinate this beforehand, because now I'm angry I don't have Yoan Moncada. But so it goes. My second pick here from the world roster is going to be Alex Reyes. of the Cardinals organization. A guy who this season, kind of like Fulmer, has been a little uneven. He gets the aggressive push to AAA Memphis. He's coming off. He had a 50-game drug of abuse suspension to start the season, so didn't get his start until May 22nd. Is finding himself a little bit, but this is just a guy who has two plus pitches in his fastball and his curveball. Curveball might be a little bit behind the fastball, but either one could probably get major league bats out right now if we were going to send him to the majors. He's looking like he's improving a little bit. In his last start, he had 9 strikeouts in 6 2/3 innings, only gave up 1 run on 3 hits and 2 walks. Has struggled a little bit with control this year. We were talking earlier about Glasnow. Reyes also fits into that mold of guy with just crazy wild stuff, but can be wild at times. He's walked 20 batters in 41 and a third innings. But to have him in my system, he's only 21, not turning 22 until the end of August. So he's a 21-year-old right now in AAA who is finding some success there. You know, I think he could be a help to the Cardinals if they want him out of the bullpen in September. I'm obviously taking him here thinking he's going to be a starter. I think everybody believes he can be a starter. But he could fit that like Carlos Martinez role of just a guy who they bring in first as a reliever, let him show an electric stuff, and then bring him back into a starting gig. But Reyes just has the stuff that when you're watching on MILB TV or better in person or this Sunday at the Futures game will definitely wow you with some of the swings and misses he's going to get, or just the frustrated shaking of the heads going back. I'm not too worried given his youth, the way he's performed at AAA right now, and given that it is a relatively small sample, it's only 9 starts, 41 and a third innings. So let him find himself. But between Swanson and Reyes, we have two really good cornerstones, I think, in my dream farm system that I'm making here. So that's my second pick. If we're snaking this, then that means I get the third wild card, right? That's how that's going to work.
Yep.
Okay, sure. So I'm going to go back to the outfield, but I'm actually going to stay in the – you know what? I'm talking my way through this. I'm going to the outfield, and I'm going to talk my way which one I want. I'm thinking about either David Dahl with the U.S. roster or Manuel Margot with the world roster, just because I really like – you know, guys who can stick in center field, guys who are athletic, can do a lot of things. I'm going to go with Margot. I'm going to leave. You know, maybe Dahl does not stay on the board. We're only doing 3 rounds. So in the dream fourth, maybe I take him in the fourth. But Margot, I really like him. He's coming over to the Padres in his first season there after coming over from the Red Sox in the Craig Kimbrel trade. A guy who has plus speed, 23 steals this year at AAA El Paso. Again, another young guy. He's 21, not turning 22 until September 28th. Is certainly holding his own. He's hitting 298 in the PCL with a 770 OPS. When you read his scouting reports, everybody talks about how that speed translates well into center. Can certainly cover a lot of ground out there. It showed a decent amount of pop. He's got 4 homers, 8 triples, which is on the high side. Again, that speed playing into it. He's got gap-to-gap power. When you talk about building a team, I would build up the middle. So right now I've got a shortstop, a right-handed pitcher, and a center fielder. And I think that's the type of cornerstones on which good farm systems are made. So I'm pretty happy there. I'm going to round it out with Dansby Swanson, Alex Reyes, and Manuel Margot.
I like it. It's a solid group. We're going wild cards, and I'm going to go with a wild card. You know, build up the middle. Got to get the athletic guys that can play in center. No, Sam, my team needs a bopper. I'm going to put butts in the seats. Tyler O'Neill of the Seattle Mariners
does nothing but
demolish baseballs from Maple Ridge, British Columbia, the hometown of my favorite baseball player of all time, Larry Walker. Tyler O'Neill. I'm going with Tyler O'Neill. This season, the Mariners prospect so far, Double-A Jackson in the Southern League, slashing .303, .369, .532, 15 homers, 63 runs batted in. One of our favorite guys to talk to. I really like Tyler O'Neill. He is a power prospect who's going to strike out a lot, but it's not to the extent of a lot of other power prospects. 79 games this year, he struck out 85 times. I love watching Tyler O'Neill hit. and the maturity, the mental approach that he brings as a power guy, I feel like is more advanced than a lot of times what we see from guys who can smash dingers 975 feet. I don't know what that is in meters for our Canadian audience, but I'm going to go back on the world roster and take Tyler O'Neill. We got to put butts in the seats, man.
Yeah, see, there
people love the long ball.
People do love the long ball, and they do love it if they have to bust out their the metric system and try to figure it out.
Meters on the wall.
Right, yeah. I think it's when you were trying to do the calculation, I think it comes out to just several meters. It's just
Several meters. Handful of meters.
Yeah, many, many meters. Not kilometers, perhaps, but many meters.
E-T-R-E-S.
Yes. Yeah. Meters. Meters.
So there we have it. Futures game is coming up on Sunday at Petco Park in San Diego. It's going to be a lot of fun. There is not much that compares on the prospect calendar in nerdery to how much the futures game brings, the excitement level of the futures game, getting to see all those guys in one place at one time. And they get to wear some pretty sweet throwback-looking Padres duds.
Oh, yeah. Those, I like them. Is it the brown and yellow?
Yeah, they're going with the
bring
brown
back
and
the brown and yellow.
Yeah,
forever
exactly.
And always.
Own it, San Diego.
Yeah.
Come on. Futures game coming up on Sunday, and that does it for our second sort of fantasy draft. We might make this a regular thing. The AFL to rousing success, obviously, and this one now doing it for the futures game. When we return, Benjamin Hill is back from his road trip through the Appalachian League, and we're going to discuss with Ben all things of the rookie level circuit, his tour through West Virginia and Tennessee and all those Appy League states. And we'll talk about what's coming up for Benjamin Hill, both on the site and in his next road trip. Ben joins the show next. Geographic dynamic this week for our conversation with Benjamin Hill, who is back at home and back in the MILB.com offices, the headquarters, the shining house on the hill, as we call it. But Sam and I, neither of us are there. Hey, Ben.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Welcome back. I guess I can welcome you back. I haven't seen you, and I'm not there, but you're holding down the fort for us today, being back in New York.
Yeah, no, I feel very welcomed. I got back from my last trip, the entire tour of the Appalachian League on July 5th, and back in the offices today and resuming normal operations till the next trip.
The Appalachian League, which, as we learned last week, is not the Appalachian League, it's the Appalachian League, and you got to tour a lot through the East Division. You did all 10 teams in 10 days in that league, which is something you had not attempted before, but the Appy League was kind of a relatively small footprint, so you got to trek all the way throughout the entire circuit. And since the last time we talked to you, I know you visited Burlington, took a swing through Danville, Pulaski. What are some of the highlights that stuck out since our last conversation with you? Where were you last time? Not at a rest stop. That was when we talked to you last year at one point, but on the road where we caught up with you in a rental car, I think.
Yeah, well, last week I was, because the Appy League is, the teams are in such close proximity, I did the whole first half of the trip in Johnson City, staying in Johnson City as my base, and then kind of commuting to all the teams in the West Division. And then the second half of the trip was a little more driving. I spent two nights in Bluefield, seeing Bluefield and Princeton, and then one night in Pulaski, and then one night in Danville, and then one night in an airport hotel after seeing the Burlington Royals, and then back home. So there's a little more movement in the East Division than it was in the West, but it's still, I did this whole trip, 10 teams in 10 days, on two tanks of gas, done, period, which is not bad for going to 10 ballparks and doing it on two tanks of gas. So not too much driving, a league in which a lot of the teams are very close to one another. And, since we talked last week, I saw the whole East Division. I really liked Bluefield, the Bluefield Blue Jays. They play in Bowen Field, a really old ballpark on, public park property with a beautiful wooded backdrop, a lot of interesting characters in the stands. And that was that's one of the things I always try to emphasize on these trips is you might have an idea what a place is like, but often it's not until you go that you really get that true sense of this is what that is. And Bluefield was definitely one of my highlights and one I wasn't necessarily expecting to be so great. And then the night after that, I saw the Pulaski Yankees, and they play in Calfee Park, which goes back it's a WPA ballpark, built in the wake of the Great Depression, and had really fallen on hard times, owned by the city. The team was in danger of losing, or the city was in danger of losing the teams. And a local businessman, Mark Hagan, who owns some automobile dealerships. He came in, he bought the park from the city, put in a lot of money in upgrades, and they went from possibly the weakest and most decrepit operation in the league to now leading the league in attendance. I mean, they have a new video board, and new clubhouses, and tons of improvements.
So
and
that's the only
beautiful ballpark
in the league too, right?
It is. It is, which is kind of nice. You know, I completely understand the 21st century minor league baseball dynamic. And if you're going to have a new ballpark, you need that new video board. You need something to keep the game, the fans engaged in this ADD era. But it's kind of nice going to these small town rookie level environments and, you know, maybe being a little more muted on the between inning promotions, maybe being a little calmer with, you know, video boards and the audio blasts and all that. But it's also good to see teams who are able to adapt and change, and even within their old ballparks, you know, bring a more modern feel and, you know, keep the team and keep the experience vibrant. And that was one of my favorite things about the Appy League, is the teams that were able to incorporate their very old surroundings with elements of the new, and thereby, you know, trying to achieve a best of both worlds status, which I think a couple of those teams are doing really well. Pulaski for sure, Burlington Royals as well. Just a real interesting place to be.
And when you're talking about Pulaski, is it just a scoreboard? I mean, what kind of improvements have they done to that park? When you're saying, you know, it's a Depression era park, what have they done to really change that attendance? Is it community relations? I mean, what was your sense of it when you got to visit that's bringing people there in droves when that wasn't the case before?
Well, certainly an increased marketing effort, you know, kind of goes hand in hand with the ballpark improvements. Their general manager, Blair Hoke, I believe that's how you pronounce her last name, but she's doing a great job, and they have a very engaged and energetic staff. So obviously increased marketing, but the increased marketing goes hand in hand with all the improvements they made. So, yes, there's the video board. You know, there's new seating behind home plate and down the first baseline, new seats almost everywhere. But because it's a historic facility, they also had to obey a lot of, you know, the pretty strict rules regarding renovating a historic landmark. So the third base side, which has a covered grandstand, they couldn't touch the grandstand itself. And the entrance down the third base side, out on the left field side, is stone, and it looks like you're entering like a Civil War fort or something like that, and that remains. But with the new, a lot of new seating, revamped concessions, new clubhouses, it's definitely the nicest clubhouses and some of the best player amenities in the Appy League. And it's really impressive to see that mix of old and new, and really cool to see a local guy, you know, who's been successful in the automobile industry, you know, really put his money where his mouth is and restore baseball to Pulaski when it's really likely they would have lost it if they just continued to be run on a shoestring by the city.
Ben, you mentioned that you were stationed in Johnson City for the first leg of this trip, and you had a really cool story that came out of Johnson City with the 18-year-old radio voice of the Johnson City Cardinals, Joey Liberatore. And Joey's story is really neat in the way that he got into really knowing how to knowledgeably talk baseball, which is through a relationship with his father. But basically, long story short, played high school baseball, tore his UCL, rehabbed that injury, tore it again, decided, maybe I just shouldn't play baseball. And now he's 18 years old and a broadcaster. Tell us about Joey.
Yeah, he was a great guy to meet. You know, I try to go into each ballpark thinking of story ideas, but sometimes they just sort of happen when I'm at the ballpark. And when I was in Johnson City, that was unfortunately my one rainout of the entire trip, seeing the Johnson City Cardinals. But of course, I was just going to hang out as much as I could anyway. And I was in the press box and struck up a conversation with Joey. And he looked like a young guy, but at the same time, everyone's young in the Appy League for the most part, at least the players, broadcasters, most of the front office staff. So I didn't think too much of it, but he mentioned he's 18. And I started the wheels turning in my head. I was like, man, 18. And this kid seems pretty, pretty self-possessed and knowledgeable and confident. And I can't think of a younger guy, you know, broadcasting for a professional team, graduating high school and then going right to affiliated minor league baseball. So, you know, as he said, he hung up the cleats at age 15 and went right into broadcasting and attended a broadcasting school. And for his junior and senior years of high school, he spent half his day at the broadcasting school, got a lot of experience through engineering spring training games. That led to work with the Tennessee Smokies. The Tennessee Smokies, their ownership group manages the Johnson City Cardinals. That led to this connection. And then, like, here this kid is at 18, really achieving beyond his years. And, you know, it's a long way to the major leagues. But you see a kid like that accomplishing this much by age 18, and it's really makes you pause, because you're like, man, if he's only 18 now, just think where he has the potential to be at still a young age, at 25, at 29, at 33. It's pretty cool to talk to him and see that level of achievement.
And just so I get this right, he's not even from, like, the Johnson City area, because I remember when I first heard about him, I thought it was just a local kid that, you know, happened to apply to the job, you know, lives around the corner, gets dropped off by his mom, something like that. But he's from Mesa, Arizona area, right? So this is not some, this is something he had to go out and travel to.
Yeah, he's an Arizona guy, and through doing, he got to know Kevin Sagi, the communications director for the Chicago Cubs, and he, in that way, he got in touch with Len Casper and Mick Gillespie, who do the Cubs spring training broadcasts, and that kind of got him into the baseball world. Yeah, so he got into the world of baseball through connections with the Cubs, and, you know, Len Casper and Mick Gillespie, the other season with the Tennessee Smokies, were you know, big influences on him, and helped him get work with the Smokies, and then that led to Johnson City. So, I mean, he's gone from, you know, Arizona to Tennessee, now in Johnson City, and all at the age of 18.
Really cool story. Joey got into his knowledge about baseball. His father was a long-distance truck driver. They would really just connect over phone calls, and this is one of my favorite quotes ever. He said, quote, "I didn't want to have a dud conversation with him, so I would go into depth on starting lineup stats and stuff like that, and that's where my passion for baseball really began." It's so neat how people get into it. Everybody's got a story, and Joey's is really cool. Go check out Ben's piece on him. That's up on the site right now at MILB.com. Right now, Ben is off of the road for the month of July, but the first day in August, you're taking off for the West Coast to visit the Sacramento Rivercats. And there's a good mix coming up in that trip out west. You're going to see some AAA ball, some high A ball. You'll see some short season Class A ball with the Boise Hawks coming up on that trip. A lot coming up on that trip through the West swing.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. It's kind of an awkward itinerary, but I'm getting to the point now where I'm getting close to having visited all the ballparks. So last year I didn't make it west of Omaha, and I was like, well, I got to make it west this year. And if I'm going to go all the way west, I really want to make sure I hit teams that I've missed in the past. So kind of hitting some Northern California teams that I haven't been to, Sacramento and San Jose. And that gives me a chance to revisit Modesto, Visalia, Stockton. Then in Nevada, because I've still never seen Las Vegas 51s. I can hit Reno again, who I did go to once, but it was a rain out. And then I will finally complete the Northwest League with Boise and Spokane and Tri-Cities. And then I will been to every Northwest League team. So it's going to be a lot of driving, and it's kind of an awkward itinerary, but I think it's going to be a pretty varied landscape in terms of the places, the ballparks, the people, the level of play. And I'm looking forward to that. But in the meantime, I've got 3.5 weeks or so back here in the office and going to be writing a lot about the Appy League throughout pretty much all that time, as well as the usual MILB shenanigans. And hey, I need a place to live. I need an apartment. So if anyone has any New York City apartment needs, get in touch. It's going, but nothing yet. So if any listeners of the podcast want to hook up a minor league baseball writer, a esteemed minor league baseball writer, with a any real estate leads, I'd appreciate it. It's tough in this city, but it gets in my blood. I can't leave it, at least not yet.
One with much critical acclaim, he is Benjamin Hill. If you have questions about the road trip or the business of minor league baseball or anything else, and also real estate leads, you can get in touch with Ben on Twitter. He's at Ben's Biz, and you can check out the blog, which is bensbiz.mlblogs.com. More stuff coming to the site from this trip and more, and Ben, enjoy a few weeks away, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, will do. Good talking to you guys. Sam, congratulations to your sister getting married. And, hopefully one day we'll all be in the same room. It'll be magical.
Yeah, it always is. It always is.
Sam's sister's getting married. We got the Futures game coming up. It's a whole hell of a weekend for all of us with the Minor League Baseball podcast, the show before the show, and we were getting set to wrap up. Sam, what do you got, MILB TV this week?
Yeah, so normally I do try to tell people, you know, this is the game I'll be watching, and I don't want to lie to everybody and say this is the game I'll be, because I'm just going to be so busy this weekend and stuff. But the Dayton Dragons are taking on Great Lakes this weekend, which means the games are on MILB TV, they are for your viewing pleasure. And the reason I bring that up is because the Reds Class A affiliate now has Nick Senzel, who was the second overall pick in this year's draft. Senzel got called up to Dayton after spending 10 games at Billings. A lot of people thought he was probably the safest pick in this year's draft coming out of the University of Tennessee. We talk a lot about these draft picks, how they perform in the Cape Cod League. He was actually the Cape Cod League MVP last summer. Coming into this year, showed a good hitting ability, some decent pop at third base for the Volunteers. Got taken with a second overall pick with the Reds. Decent chance he could become the system's top prospect when rankings are updated later this summer. In his first five games with Dayton, he's gone 7-for-22. That's a .318 batting average with four doubles and five runs scored in five games. So he has performed well. I'm starting to find himself back with a wood bat this year. If you're a Reds fan, this is a really good chance to see the new big guy in the system. And so his Dayton Dragons will be taking on Great Lakes this weekend. You get a couple of opportunities to see Nick Senzel on your whatever device you watch MILB TV on.
I'm going to go a few steps up the ladder, and this one you got to get to MILB TV quickly because it starts this evening at 8:05 p.m. Eastern Time. But this pick was inspired by a tweet from friend of the podcast Alex Friedman, the radio voice of the Oklahoma City Dodgers, who said 5 days ago, quote, "This team has had Urias De Leon and Stewart," referring, of course, to Julio Urias, Jose De Leon, and Brock Stewart, "but," continuing the tweet, "when Cotton is on, he might be the most fun to watch." And that's a conversation about Jarrell Cotton, the St. Thomas Virgin Islands native, who last time out was outstanding for Oklahoma City. Six innings, two hits, two runs, both of them unearned, one walk, nine strikeouts. He threw 68 of his 99 pitches, rather, for strikes. And he takes the ball tonight at Oklahoma City against Omaha, one of the lesser-known prospects in a system that has a ton of really good pitching talent, but Cotton is coming. I mean, Urias, obviously, we've seen him graduate. Jose De Leon kind of came out of nowhere from where he was taken in the draft to his current prospect status, but keep an eye on Cotton. Don't sleep on him. Really, really good, talented arm. Again, the right-hander out of East Carolina and a Virgin Islands-born prospect in the Dodgers system. He goes tonight for the Oklahoma City Dodgers against the Omaha Storm Chasers. And that does it. That does it for the final edition of the Show Before the Show podcast before the Major League All-Star break. Again, the Futures game is coming up on Sunday in San Diego, and minor league action all throughout the weekend this weekend as well. Some of your top prospects who you may be counting on seeing, the guys who are in the Futures game, you obviously won't see. They'll be traveling probably Saturday and then playing that game on Sunday. But that, again, is coming up this weekend in San Diego. Also, by the time we talk to you next, we'll have another All-Star game under the belt. The Eastern League All-Star game is coming up on July 13th. So, have a bit of conversation about that next week as well. And, Sam, enjoy. Be a good officiant.
I will do my best.
Let's take it one wedding at a time.
Yeah, that's been my life motto.
Stay within yourself.
Yeah, stay within myself, just one line at a time.
Don't try to.
And, I'm not looking forward to anything else, just helping out the team. That's all.
He's Sam Dykstra. I'm Tyler Mon. He's on Twitter at Sam Dykstra, MILB. I am at Tyler Mon. You can tweet at us. You can tweet at Minor League Baseball as well at MILB. And you can get in touch with the show, podcast at MILB.com. And also, wherever you get your podcast, head on over there and give us a rating and a review and a subscription. We always love hearing from you. And until next week, enjoy the Futures game and another weekend of Minor League Baseball. We'll talk to you then.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.